We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
How we doing? IB Nation Sports Talk up and running along with Jesse Stiers. I'm Sean Stiers. It is Notre Dame. It is USA victory over Iran Day, right?
Like, yeah, that's what we're going to celebrate today.
That's right. Salty Head is counting down, ready to go. The U.S. wins 1-0 in the World Cup. A tense one. It sounded like they scored the only goal in the first half, right? I didn't see the whole thing. I've just kind of
So they scored in the first half. Pulisic put one in, and a crosser took a shot to the abdomen, and actually had to be taken to the hospital from
that.
The
I heard about.
And then second half came out. It seemed like there was a concerted effort to maybe be on the defense a little bit more, and things got really a lot closer than I think a lot of people would have hoped towards the end. Iran had, you know, a couple shots on goal that were pretty close. And that situation, you know, if Iran ties it, they're going on. And so the U.S. had to win that game. They couldn't give up any type of goal. It was just really nice to see them move on, though, after not making it 4 years ago. They're back to the knockout stage. They're going to play the Netherlands this Saturday. So a great, great matchup. And now it's single elimination. So really excited and hoping that they can continue to go on. But it's going to be tough. You know, they've only scored 2 goals in these 3 games. That's going to be the biggest question is, you know, how are they going to keep up the production?
Yep. Well, they won, though. That's all that matters at this point. They're down to, I believe it's the quarterfinals, right? Like the final 16?
16, yes.
Yeah. I don't know if that's quarters or not, but yeah. In any case. Salty talking to you. There's a white furred animal roaming around behind you. He hopes this is not unexpected news.
Yes. So Henry's mom just got home, so I'm sure he's very excited right now.
All right. So Henry's going crazy. All right. Hey, if you would hit that like button in YouTube. I saw some of the likes versus people waiting earlier. I mean, what are you waiting for? If you're sitting there waiting, hit the like button. You got nothing better to do at that point, right? And if you're in there already with us right now, just hit the like button. We appreciate it. And of course, rate, review, subscribe on wherever you get your podcast. We always appreciate it. So 1 year anniversary, Brian Kelly. We got a few different things that we're going to talk about today. As always, of course, rapid fire, we get a slew of different topics, but I thought it was notable, significant, whatever you want to call it. This is the 1 year anniversary that the news dropped that Brian Kelly was leaving Notre Dame for LSU. Do you remember your initial reaction when you heard the news?
Yeah, I mean, I was just a little shocked when it first came out. I saw it over, you know, the internet, probably like most people on Twitter, and that's kind of how things, I feel like I found out about a lot of things now, is especially when it comes to sports, is Twitter, right? And so I guess I was shocked because I didn't even know that it was really an option, or that he was, you know, exploring that avenue. I knew that Brian Kelly had always kind of been in talks with, you know, various NFL teams. And I always thought that the NFL was going to be maybe his next move. I never thought he would leave and maybe go to another college school. And let alone just kind of, especially after the last 4 or 5 years went for him with all the 10 win seasons. So it was just shocking. You know, it was kind of like the last thing I expected, I think, that day when it popped up.
Yeah, it seemed like the NFL stuff, like any NFL stuff you heard, was like almost like not really reliable, not believable. It almost seemed like stuff that was probably leaked by his agent or, you know, like his own people, you know, because you started hearing that, you know, even after a not so great year. Oh, Brian Kelly, you know, could there be NFL interest? Well, I don't think so. And, you know, lo and behold, it didn't seem like there was. I don't know. But, you know, the USC stuff is what popped, you know, had been kind of following him. And I think Kirk Herbstreit had been, you know, kind of saying that he thought that Kelly would, you know, be a good fit for USC and all this different stuff to, you know, to resurrect the program and all that. And LSU was just kind of like, it never seemed like, you know, you weren't hearing anything about that. But then, boom, lo and behold, I was shocked to hear it, you know, because, again, I just felt like he had just built a new house here in town. It was year 12. He was in the midst of a successful run, only one loss last season, and they were still in college football playoff contention. And, you know, we'll get to that here in a minute. Most people probably won't admit it at this point, because, you know, like Mike S says, shocked and relieved all at the same time. Most people probably won't admit it. The initial outpouring, if you do remember, the initial outpouring was much more shock and dismay, like with the feeling of, oh no, we're losing Brian Kelly. It wasn't like good riddance, the initial stuff. The first few hours, those initial hours after the news came out that he was leaving, many more people were voicing, you know, that kind of stuff, like concern, you know, like, what are we going to do? What's this mean for, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, you're losing whatever you thought about him. You were losing a good coach. And obviously LSU felt like they were getting a good coach.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How did whatever your initial feeling was change, you know, seeing the way things went down then, probably within the next 24 hours or so? Like, you've got the team meeting the next morning, all that's, you know, he's flying back into town the early morning, calls a 7 a.m. meeting and all that stuff. How did that kind of stuff affect how you felt about it?
You know, some of that shock turned into, not disgust sounds like a harsh word, but there was just a little, there was resentment and disgust with kind of the way that he ended things at Notre Dame, because of how long he was here, the success that he had here, you know, the college football playoff appearances, the national championship appearances, the 10-win seasons, all of it, and everything that kind of, you know, built up him getting this LSU job. And whether, you know, people want to say it or not, LSU from Notre Dame is a step up for him. You know, I don't know, that's up to your personal, you know, debate about what's a step up and what's a lateral movement. But for him, the money he was getting,
like, was a step up, you know, money wise and otherwise. Otherwise, he wouldn't have made the move.
Right. So this was, you know, a step up for him. And so the thing that I had the most disgust with is I felt like he didn't recognize honor and thank, you know, his what he built at Notre Dame, because essentially that's what got him to the next spot, right? Like you don't go to a place to LSU after, you know, wherever you're at, unless you had success, and success is through your players. You can coach all you want, but the players are still doing it for you at the end of the day. They're the ones buying in. And so to show, you know, to call a team meeting that early in the morning and then to, you know, dip out after just a couple minutes, I felt like it wasn't very, there wasn't like a heartfelt, you know, thank you. I appreciate my time here. I appreciate all the hard work that everyone put in, you know, on my behalf. And because of this, I now have a better opportunity for myself and to go on to LSU. So I had a lot of disgust because of how he left things and the way he didn't, you know, appreciate his players in the end.
Right, right. And the way the players obviously found out, and they had the app and, you know, the whole text thing and everyone, you know, it's like you expect more. Now, I realize it can be hard, but, you know, he was on the West Coast and all that stuff. There, I don't buy the whole timeline of events that all this took place within, you know, like a 24-hour window as soon as the Stanford game was over, that all of a sudden, okay, Brian Kelly just got this offer, boom, now he's taking the head coaching job. I just, the timeline had to have been more protracted than that. And for him, you know, to essentially fly back into town, call this early morning meeting, stand up there, really just more or less make it about himself, you know, because we saw the video that whatever the players were, you know, taped inside that room. And then for him, you know, because the room that they did it in the main auditorium there at the Goog, it's kind of like a movie theater, excuse me, where you walk in at the ground level and then the players sit, you know, kind of up in movie theater seating. And then his office, you go up the steps beside those seats, his office is up at the top, you know, so he starts at the bottom. He gives his little, you know, I'm leaving and, you know, here's why it's good for me thing. And he leaves and you kind of see him looking over. I think he thought he was going to get some kind of standing ovation from the team that never came. And, you know, so I think that when it all shook down, Brian Kelly was about Brian Kelly. It should be no surprise. And now look, he's not the first coach to pack up and take a job. He's not, you know, it's not the first time, obviously, he did it the exact same way. Because part of the irony of this whole thing is mid-season, right after he breaks Newt Rockne's record to become Notre Dame's all-time winningest head coach, the next week he's got his old team, Cincinnati, coming into town. And every time something, you know, he's being recognized for beating Wisconsin the week before at Soldier Field when he's at Notre Dame Stadium before the game. And, of course, a booze rain out from all the Cincinnati fans who are still ticked off for how they jilted him 12 years ago in the exact same fashion. So, you know, and I think that you kind of sit back and you look at that as well. Like, this guy did it twice in the exact same fashion to the last two places he was at. So I think that that obviously skewed a lot of people's opinions in a hurry, because again, there was a lot of goodwill early on, but then when the team finds out before he actually tells them, and how he called this early meeting only to last like 7 minutes or something like that, and then to, you know, to bolt out, the mood changed rather quickly, I would say. So and I think that that changed a lot of people's opinions about him. Could he have done anything differently, you know, that would, you know, maybe have changed the way that you felt about him leaving?
Yeah, I think the number one thing would just actually be delivering a heartfelt message to his team as he's departing. You know, this isn't like a, oh, hey, goodbye type situation. I just wanted there to be more of, you know, some actual like feelings and heartfulness, like I was talking about, of just recognizing the hard work that all of these guys have done in order for him to make this next move. I just felt like he was, you know, trying to break up with a bad ex or something. Him and the relationship with Notre Dame was always something good. There was, you know, obviously when you're out of school for so long and there's expectations, there's certain things that probably bother you as a head coach, but it's not like it was Brian Kelly versus Notre Dame. There was, you know, it was a very good relationship. And then just to leave like that, it just felt like that he could have done more to recognize the program, the team, and kind of, you know, everything that was done for him at the University of Notre Dame.
Yeah. Rashomon 18. I don't miss BK one bit. I wish he would have left about 4 years ago.
You know, this is, people get, you know, very worked up about the whole him leaving. And I reckon this is my only bad things about Brian Kelly are the way that he kind of, you know, got into it with media towards the end and the way he left. But you have to recognize and respect what Brian Kelly did at Notre Dame. He came into a program and said he was going to make changes and that they would have success. And they did. He turned it around quickly. They went to a national championship. They went to playoffs. They played in big games. They had 10 win seasons. He did what he was supposed to at the University of Notre Dame. And I still think that people should appreciate and respect him as a coach, more than they should. How you feel about him as a person is one thing, but as a coach, he's a top level coach.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. And I get for some people, it's hard to separate, but you can be a good coach and not be a great person. Just like you can be a great guy, great person, but not be a great coach.
Look at Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, it's exactly it. It works both ways, you know? Just look at Auburn dancing with the devil once again, you know? So it got to catch Alabama though, right? But, you know, for years, you know, like this comment right here, I wish he would have left about 4 years ago. And probably for the last 3 or 4 years, we were getting the comments like, let's say Brian Kelly decided to retire, you know, at the end of the season, who would be the candidates to replace him? You know, without saying, I really want Brian Kelly to leave. That was basically the code for, I really want Brian Kelly to leave. Or, you know, what they were really saying is, I hope that they get rid of Brian Kelly. They were, you know, Notre Dame was never going to get rid of Brian Kelly as long as he kept winning the way that he did. And, you know, they showed that, I think, a long time ago. But, you know, so that those were the kind of questions that we were getting over the last 2, 3, maybe 4 years. Who are the hot candidates? Who would you want if Brian Kelly did decide to retire or step away? And there was some of that talk as well. And that kind of surprised. Yeah, so, like, you know, going back to the original question, I guess, you know, that the fact that he would pack up and leave Notre Dame for a place like LSU when there had sort of been some of this talk about maybe he's going to retire within the next 3 or 4 years, you know, that kind of thing. And he just did get the Notre Dame all-time, you know, wins record. What Stymie said, what we were just talking about, finishing out the season would have been better, but I can get behind ripping off the Band-Aid too. And, you know, I think that everyone would have liked to see him at the very least stick around for another week and see if they were, you know, whether or not they were going to be in the playoff picture. That didn't happen. You know, as I think Stymie or Salty said before, bowl prep hadn't even begun because you were less than 48 hours removed from the Stanford game wrapping up on the West Coast. But it's never a perfect situation. You know, that's one of the biggest problems with college football is what's going on right now, hiring and firing season. You know, some of these schools had already cleared out, you know, like Nebraska obviously made their move back in September, and some of these other schools did as well. So, you know, they've had a lot of time to kind of sit back and go through their process, but other schools are just now getting into it. But because of the fact that you've got so long between the end of the regular season and your bowl games, it's never going to be a perfect situation. Because these schools, you know, like you've got signing day coming up, you want to keep your, you know, signing class together, all these different things. The next school that hires you wants you right away. So there's just no perfect way to do it. I'm not defending Brian Kelly because for his, you know, for him in particular, there are definitely ways he could have handled it better. But it's just for anyone, there's just no perfect way, I think, unless you're hiring someone, you know, like Matt Rhule, who's coming back from the NFL, who had already been fired by the NFL.
I agree.
So do you feel any differently about Kelly now after seeing what he did at LSU this year?
You know, honestly, I didn't think that he would have this sort of success at LSU this quickly, to be honest with you. I mean, if they don't lose that game last week, they have very serious contentions of getting into the college football playoff if they end up beating Georgia in the SEC championship, right? So I didn't expect him to have the kind of success that he had right away, but it goes along with what I thought of him as always being a very solid coach. Anywhere he goes, he starts to win. I just didn't expect him to win as quickly at LSU. And I guess when he departed, you know, I guess I don't have any other feelings, because when he left, I kind of just detached from it. You know, he was gone. Yeah. There was nothing that could be really done. I was just more interested in what kind of success that he would have at LSU and how quickly, you know, would he fall on his face and have a very average year? It looked like that when, you know, when they opened up against Florida State, but Florida State ended up being a good team. LSU ended up being a good team. You know, I was really honestly surprised by the fact that he had the success that he had, based on kind of what people, you know, what we saw out of LSU and Ed Orgeron's last year. There was a lack of effort. There was a lack of, you know, defensive mentality, a lack of physicality, a lot of different things. And Brian Kelly really came in and changed things quicker than I thought he was going to.
Yeah, I think so as well. And like Stymie brings up a legitimate question. Is LSU that good, or is it a down year for the SEC?
I mean, he beat Alabama. That's
anytime, you know, just ask Auburn. That's why they made that hire, you know, escort service hotline or not. And, you know, that's why Auburn has who they have. And that's why they cleared house the way they cleared house, you know, from the top down out there to win, to be able to beat Alabama. They're, and Hugh Freeze beat Alabama a couple of times before, you know, so they're completely willing to do that. The one thing I would say, one, I'll give Brian Kelly credit because he did win. You know, I thought that just what you were saying, based on what Ed Orgeron had and the way that team was, the way the roster was when he took it over, I thought he was going to have a really rough first year. You know, as it ended up, they ended up being in college football playoff contention. But they also went out and hit the transfer portal. And that's, you know, one of the reasons he left is he can do things at LSU that he couldn't do at Notre Dame. You can't go out and raid the transfer portal en masse when you're at Notre Dame. You know, apparently you can at USC. You can't do it at Stanford, but you can at LSU. So between the fact that he thought that he was going into a situation that would be easier for him to recruit higher level athletes, and the fact that he could go out and get guys through the transfer portal and get good right away, you know, his quarterback came from the transfer portal. And, you know, Notre Dame has to go the grad transfer route most of the time. Brandon Joseph is still the exception to the rule in terms of an undergrad transfer coming in here.
You know, I think another important aspect to look at is, how do you feel 1 year removed about where Notre Dame sits, you know, with or without Brian Kelly? And I think how I feel about that ultimately is, I honestly believe that Notre Dame is in a better situation with Marcus Freeman compared to Brian Kelly, even though, you know, Brian Kelly had one win better than Marcus Freeman this season, with, you know, a lot of the same kind of roster, I guess you could say, with what, you know, Brian Kelly left and what Marcus Freeman inherited. I think they're in a better situation because I think that they have someone who is more, what's the best, enthusiastic about the player coach relationships. I think Marcus Freeman is tremendous when it comes to player, you know, his relationships with his players compared to Brian Kelly. I think that Marcus Freeman is going to be a much better recruiter at an elite level. He's not going to make excuses for his shortcomings. Marcus Freeman always, you know, throws himself under the bus first before he throws anyone else under the bus. I think that's very admirable about Marcus Freeman. And when you have to look at, you know, Brian Kelly in his first couple of years, he went 7-5, 8-4, and then went into the national championship in year three. I think we're going to see a very similar trend with Marcus Freeman. I'm not saying national championship, but I think in 3 years, Notre Dame will definitely be in the playoff. I think he's going to get his guys in here. I think we're going to see higher level recruits than what Brian Kelly could bring in. So, you know, post Brian Kelly leaving, I think Notre Dame is in better shape. They have a younger coach who seems to care about, you know, more important things than what Brian Kelly cared about. I think Brian Kelly cared about himself as a coach, and everything else kind of came second.
Two biggest differences between, well, you know, there are more than just two, but between Kelly and Marcus Freeman, it start with the personality that Marcus Freeman has and the way that he's able to connect with people, you know, the way that he is more genuine with people, that is not, you know, not everything is a transactional relationship like it was with Brian Kelly. You know, there's a big gap in the coaching experience, obviously, basically 3 decades on Kelly's side, now 1 season on Marcus Freeman's side. You'll get coaching experience over time. I don't think Brian Kelly's personality overchanged with time, and his appetite, you know, for being a better recruiter didn't change over time. He went out and got a Marcus Freeman and got guys that he thought who could do the recruiting for him. And obviously that was paying off in the 1 year that Marcus Freeman was under him so well that it became obvious that this is the kind of guy that, and as we step back from this now, there were going to be some growing pains. We didn't know what the growing pains were going to look like, but the recruiting class is held together. It keeps getting stronger. They're getting close to the finish line now with the early signing period coming up. And I just what you said, I think it's going to continue to get better. So I do think that ultimately Notre Dame is in a better place. It's just a matter of continuing to stack these big classes on top of big classes. It's not enough just to have one. Now you got to go out and get the next one as well. But I think that that's a task that Marcus Freeman and his guys are fully up to.
Yeah, I think the biggest example you can look at, and like the if you want to look at where recruiting is going and the level of athlete that's coming to the University of Notre Dame now under Marcus Freeman, Benjamin Morrison is Class A example of what I think we can expect at, you know, positions outside of cornerback. He's going to bring in guys like this at wide receiver. He's going to bring in guys at like this at linebacker. It's just a matter of time before we see these guys actually start working in, you know, and getting into the system here. And that's what's ultimately the kind of the thing that we have to be patient with is getting guys like Benjamin Morrison, you know, through the cycle of Notre Dame, because I think that's the level of player that we're going to continue to see from now on.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're going to have to get used to, as these, you know, higher starred guys start coming in, you're going to have to get more used to the fact that the Michael Mayers of the world are going to be the rule as opposed to the exception. You're going to see more 3-year guys as opposed to 4-year and even 5-year guys, but that's good because the state of the program, I think, is going to be in a lot better shape. And, you know, like Mr. 2.0 says, the season went as well as it did because Marcus Freeman works his tail off and was able to pack in about 1.5 to 2 years of head coaching learning into his first season. And, you know, I think the point of that is the fact that Marcus Freeman, you know, there were things that we saw Marcus Freeman, he was willing to be very self-reflective, look in the mirror all the time and say, okay, I need to get better at that. You know, we saw growth from him as a head coach throughout the season when things could have easily fallen apart after the loss to Stanford. You know, he just kept working. And, you know, again, looking at himself, how do I make this better? How do I keep this thing together? And, you know, obviously the USC game didn't go the way anyone wanted it to go. It's close.
No he just scar. Wasn't there yet. USC was the better team, unfortunately.
That's right. That's right. Just not quite over the hump yet.
That's a big test for a first-year head coach to end your season against a playoff team and the guy that's probably going to win the Heisman. That's a tough ending to a first season.
I'll save the letter grade on this question from Brent, because that's one of the things that we're going to do over the next couple of weeks. We're going to do some evaluating of, you know, position groups and coaches and, you know, especially the new hires and stuff like that. It's really, you know, again, I don't want to put a letter grade to this. I would say Al Golden, you know, I'll tell you what, I'll save this here for just a second. You want to save it for when we have that question in rapid fire and kind of.
Yeah, I actually was hoping that you would highlight the comment, because I remember that we are going to get into a little bit of that later.
Yeah.
And I'll come think back that to this question point, in rapid fire is a good segue into kind of the overall picture of the defense this season.
Right. We'll come back to this because we got something in rapid. You know, this, again, it ties into a question that we've got. So we'll save that for rapid fire. But I think there was good. There was bad. I think there was more good than bad. It's just that, you know, sometimes it was hard to to tell the difference. Jess, you haven't had the chance to comment. You know, you did the countdown to kickoff show with Vince on Saturday. You haven't had the chance to comment since the Notre Dame USC game. So I know you thought that there was one major coaching decision that Lincoln Riley made that ultimately won the game for USC.
Yeah, so I was really hoping that I'd get a chance today to kind of briefly get into my thoughts about the game, because of I didn't get to, you know, do the watch party. I didn't do the post game show. And then obviously a lot of the bigger reactions on this show come on Monday, considering it's the first show after the weekend. And I got into it a little bit there. You know, USC, first and foremost, was just the better team. Ultimately, you know, where they're at right now, Lincoln Riley has more experience than Marcus Freeman, has a quarterback that is probably going to be the finalist for the Heisman, if not win the Heisman. But early on in the game, as I was watching, I thought that Lincoln Riley made one major decision, saying like the ultimate thing that won USC the game. This is just I thought. Yeah, I can hear you.
You're kind of chopping up a little bit there. You started chopping a little bit all of a sudden. So I just want to make sure that your connection's good, because I know you've got something good to say there, and I want people to be able to hear it.
Can we hear better now?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so just to recap a little bit of what I was getting into, if you heard me, you didn't hear me, I thought USC obviously was a better team. They had a Heisman finalist, if not the Heisman winner. But there was one thing that I noticed early in the game that Lincoln Riley did, and it was a deliberate move, and I think it helped USC, and ultimately it's what won USC the game, in my opinion, amongst other things. But Lincoln Riley made a conscious decision that his team was going to come out and run the ball when the whole focus was rightfully on Caleb Williams and their passing game and Addison at wide receiver, right? And all week, Lincoln Riley heard about how Notre Dame was going to run the ball on his defense because his defense wasn't very good. Well, look at what happened. USC was expected to pass the ball, and they came out and ran and established their run game early while simultaneously, you know, stopping Notre Dame's run game. And then when they got a big enough lead, that's when they said, okay, we don't care if you open up the pass game and make it a track meet, because you're never going to catch us in a straight passing game. We know that you're going to win. If you want to go into a shootout in a track meet, we have the better quarterback, and we're going to, you know, that's our bread and butter. We're going to be able to do that. And so Lincoln Riley's conscious decision to, you know, that opening drive, they ran the ball for 33 yards and passed for 42. And 31 of those yards came on the third, you know, the first third down on that play where he extended the play and got, you know, 31 yards. So Lincoln Riley, you know, said, okay, yeah, we can't run the ball. Notre Dame's the better running team. We're going to establish the run and flip the script, right? He knew what Al Golden was going to come out and do. And then on the other hand, he said, okay, our defensive line isn't physical. Our defensive, you know, we can't stop the run. And that's immediately what they did. They shut down Notre Dame's run and made them have to go into their passing game. And so to me, that was the ultimate, you know, coaching decision, in my opinion, that flipped the game early, because when USC got that lead, there was no way that Notre Dame could go blow for blow and catch up to him in a passing attack. And I thought, you know, the biggest thing was Notre Dame, you know, USC goes out and gets a 7-0 lead. Notre Dame takes the ball and goes 8 yards on first and second down. And then they
three and out. Yeah.
And three and out. And they run the ball on all three plays, and Lincoln Riley shuts it down. Now the third and two play call was really frustrating to me, because Tommy Rees, you can't pack everything in, right? When teams know that you're supposed to stop the run and that's what you're trying to do, you can't pack everything in like that. You can't bring everyone to the line of scrimmage, and especially
because even goes with two backs out there, which is like typically I'd be going, yeah, okay, here we go. But then he did just what you said. He packed it all in. USC has all 11 guys in the box on that play.
It's just you're asking to be stopped. And another thing he did is they're on the left boundary and they run to the field side. USC's strength on defense is their speed. And you're going to try to outspeed them to the field side? I mean, come on. You pack it in and then you try to run a speed option out to the – basically a speed option play out to the field side – and wonder why you got stopped. I know there was a blown assignment by a tight end blocking, but my goodness, you can't pack everything in when everyone knows you're trying to run the ball. And so then USC gets a stop there, get a short field, and then they go up 10-0, right? And then, again, Notre Dame comes out. They run 6 run plays for only 19 yards. And again, on third down, QB sneak gets stuffed. And then fourth down, you run a play that you've showed on tape for the last 4 games. Like, run something new. You can't run the same play that you've shown on tape.
And you're talking about Mitchapalooza, of course.
Yes, and when a team knows, again, you're trying to run the ball on a short yarded situation. You can't be doing stuff that you've shown before.
I talked about this last night. You know, it wasn't just fourth and inches or fourth and a half yard. It was fourth and a long yard.
Yes.
And that's what you decide to do, where, again, you're packing everybody in the box and you're running a play that everyone has seen. It would have been the perfect time to, instead of Mitchell Evans runs it up the gut, you know, he does like the Tim Tebow where he pulls it out and he's doing a little pop pass, you know, because I think it was Jaden Thomas that was sitting on the left end there who really didn't even block anybody. He just kind of jumped on the pile at the end. You know, you could have just just a free release. And he might have even scored on that thing because there was no safety help back there.
Exactly. So that's what I was most frustrated with was, you know, Notre Dame obviously was going to, that's their bread and butter. They're going to run the ball. Lincoln Riley shut it down. And then he flipped the script and said, okay, my team is going to run the ball on you. And we're going to control the physicality and all those things. So I just thought that, you know, Notre Dame did a good overall. It was a well game. Like you look at the stats and things, you know, that a lot of similar numbers, but the numbers that were different is Notre Dame had 101 rushing yards and USC had 204 rushing yards. That's what won the game. Lincoln Riley flipped the script and said, we're going to run the ball and we're going to shut down your run game. Two things that no one thought that USC could do that week.
You know, and again, we touched on this last night, but, you know, back to Brent's comments and some of the other stuff that people have been saying, that was the biggest to me, because like I'll tie this in to what I was going to kind of bring up. Some people watched our show on YouTube last night and there were a couple comments, you know, afterwards saying that we blamed Drew Pine for the loss. More than one comment saying we blamed Drew Pine. Now, that's not even close to what Vince and I, you know, thought we said yesterday. That's not even close. So I don't know specifically what people heard that made them believe that. But, you know, because like we mentioned, hey, if you switched quarterbacks on the teams, Notre Dame is going to win that game. So if you're taking that to mean we're blaming Drew Pine for the loss, that, you know, that's not even remotely what I said. I think it's more on the defense and the lack of adjustments that Al Golden made. But at the same time, the two plays that you brought up, the three and out and the, you know, jet sweep, whatever you called that, to Logan Diggs, when if you're going to run that play, at the very least should have been Chris Tyree with the ball in his hands and not Logan Diggs. And then the Mitchapalooza thing, like those two plays getting stopped in those situations, going three and out right after USC came out and did all this misdirection and marched right downfield, scored a touchdown. Now, the defense did hold USC to a field goal after they go three and out on their opening drive. So I will give them that. And, you know, there were times, you know, the secondary played really well, but the fact that they were never able to adjust to that running game, I completely agree. But those, the three and out on your opening drive after USC has just scored and then coming up short on fourth and one with Mitchapalooza using that same play again, just going back to the well again and again and again, I thought that those two results were also, you know, played just as big a part in the result of the game ultimately.
Yeah, you know, I hate to be dramatic, but when they got stopped on that third down and got stopped on the fourth down, I thought that USC's chances to win were about 90%. There's just – when they get out to that big of a lead and what Notre Dame's offense wants to do, you can't – you're not going to catch up to USC. I'm sorry. Like, Caleb Williams threw three interceptions all season. You're not going to catch up to him. And I thought that Roe Shaman brought up a really good point. There was no creativity, again, from Tommy Rees on these short down situations. And look at what Lincoln Riley did on that first drive. How many different little plays do we see? You know, that end around play where Caleb Williams had to, you know, get offensive pass interference in the end zone. It's still a play that they hadn't shown yet. There was creativity. There was, you know, Addison taking like some sort of jet sweep. There was so much more creativity between Lincoln Riley's first drive and Tommy Rees's first drive.
Man, people are slinging it in here tonight with, you know, with the back and forth on who's to blame for what and everything else. But, yeah, so again, I guess it is what it is at this point, but there are – blaming Drew Pine was the last thing that we were trying to do last night. Was that Drew – do you think it was Drew Pine's best game?
I would take Drew Pine.
The fact that you have some hesitation means that I think we're going to be on the same page with this.
It's not, because I know his passing numbers were great. He had like 318 passing yards and only two or three incompletions. But the fact of the matter is he made the most crucial plays and his turnovers in the most crucial part of the game. You couldn't. They were driving down with that first drive after the second half. And he fumbled that ball. And if you score any sort of points on that instead of fumbling, especially a touchdown, it's a huge momentum shift. And then USC takes that turnover and goes for a touchdown themselves. And then again, towards the end, when you're trying to, you know, get some sort of comeback in, you turn the ball over again with the interception. And it's like, I know that I would take his Clemson game over that USC game. And his passing numbers were nowhere near the same in the Clemson game, but he controlled the offense. He didn't turn the ball over. And unfortunately, he turned the ball over when it mattered most against USC.
Yes. And, you know, like if you were playing fantasy football, Drew Pine had a nice fantasy football game, right? You know, he had a good response after, you know, the drive after the fumble. They drove for a touchdown that ended with Deon Colsey's first touchdown. As Lux says, numbers are deceiving, or at least they can be deceiving. He did a good job, did a lot of really good things, probably 98% of the night. Played a really good game, but he also had the two turnovers. And both of those turnovers were completely on him. There is no way around it. And I was thinking about this today. I was a high school wrestler. I remember my junior year, I'm wrestling this guy. He's one of the top guys in our weight class in the state. And I am beating this guy from the start of the match till midway through the third quarter. And virtually the entire match, I'm controlling this thing. It is my match against this guy. Then midway through the third period, I make a mistake. Next thing I know, boom, I'm on my back. That's the match. Game over. I lose after I just dominated this guy for basically the entire, you know, for all but about a minute of this match. And I'm walking off the mat. I'm pissed off. My coach grabs me and he says, that was the best match that you've wrestled all year, right up until the end. And well, guess what? The end counts. The end is part. The mistake is still part of the match, of the game, of whatever, you know, you call it, whatever sport you happen to play. You can be good for 99% of the time, but if one mistake ultimately ends up being a crucial mistake, then you can't say it's his best. Again, now I'm not blaming Drew Pine for the loss because there are a lot of other factors that go into the end result. Those two turnovers had an impact on the game. And so you can say that he had a great completion percentage, which he did. You can say he had a career high passing yards, which he did. But one of his three incompletions was an interception. You know, so it's not just 23 for 26. One of those also directly gave the other team the ball. And fumbles don't show up in the stats, of course. And that's something that I've always thought, that fumbles, that should be an official stat for offensive players. It shouldn't just be a team stat. You should know where the stat, you know, where the fumbles come from. So, you know, I'll say he had a really good statistical day, but I can't call it his best game because those two turnovers impacted the game. Again, I'm not putting it on him saying they cost them the game, but they impacted the game. If he had, you know, in the end, led Notre Dame to a comeback win after those turnovers, that negates some of those
forgotten
turnovers. Then maybe I feel differently about it. But you're out there to win. So I can't say with those two kind of costly mistakes, I can't say that it's his best game because they, you know, it's a really good game that ended in a loss. That's all it is. Just like Charlie Weiss, you know, 17 years ago, he's still the head coach that lost the Bush push game. You know, like he said afterwards, I'm still the head coach of the team that lost one of the greatest games that you'll ever see. And that's what he is 17 years later. He's still the coach that lost that game. So I can't call it his best.
Exactly. And, you know, Brent, sorry, I want to get to another comment that I saw here, and it was from Brent Smith a little bit up. And it says, Notre Dame should have begun the game passing the ball, a balanced attack. That's exactly what I was talking about in the difference that Lincoln Riley did. He flipped the script and he let his run game open up what's the better part of his offense in the pass game. I thought Notre Dame should have done the same thing and came out and attacked with the pass game and let their run game naturally, you know, open up as the game went on, because USC has proven that their secondary is not good. You know, these are high scoring games. A lot of teams rack up the passing yards. I would have liked to see Notre Dame do the same thing. They were expected to run the ball. I would have liked to see Notre Dame come out and pass the ball and then let that open up the rest of their game, similar to what USC did with the run and, you know, subsequently the pass game.
Yeah. As Brent said, 14 points off turnovers. That's, you know.
That was it.
Yeah. It's, you know, again, it's a good performance. It's a good fantasy football performance, but I can't call it his best game, just the way the game ended up at the end.